Welcome to the Hot Women Rock Radio Show, empowering women leaders at menopause. Good morning, America. Good afternoon, UK and Europe. Good evening if you are in India and beyond. Welcome, welcome. Here we are nearly at the end of April. Where did April go? Do they say April is the cruelest month? Is that the one they say is the cruelest? And I think for some of you in America, it has been pretty cruel because you've had loads of snow. Here we've had a fairly benign spring. It's a bit dry at the moment, but all the blossoms are out, so it is beautiful. And today I have an extra bonus in the studio, not one guest, but two guests, and a man in the studio as well. You know, how equal and diverse is that? So we will shortly be getting to meet two of my favorite people from Cheshire Fire Service. But before we do, I am going to look at what's in the mess. It is in the mess. The press and the media this week. So I really liked this article. There's a lot in it if you want to go and find it. It's from the website mindbodygreen.com, and it's about menopause impact on hunger and blood sugar levels. And there's a lot in it. I'm just going to tell you a few bits of it because it's a lot about explaining it and then tips for dealing with hunger at menopause. So it says, if you find yourself ravenous either before, during, or after menopause, your hormones may be responsible, but you can choose to get off the hangry roller coaster anytime you want. Supporting your body begins with self-awareness and persistence by making some simple lifestyle and food habit changes. You can manage the major metabolic hormones to help you to regain a healthy appetite and life. So, it's not just your reproductive hormones that are affected. There are two hormones that affect your appetite, and they're called ghrelin, which is G-H-R-E-L-I-N, leptin, insulin, and cortisol. They all affect your levels of hunger and your appetite. So some of the tips: limit the sugar-filled snacks, replace with nuts, seeds, gluten-free crackers, avocados, dark chocolate. Yes, ladies, we can still eat some chocolate. Dark chocolate is better. Berries and the more satiating foods. So things that keep you fuller for longer are foods that contain proteins, because protein suppresses the production of ghrelin. Eat meals every 4 to 6 hours. It says, and snack regularly. I'm not sure about that one. If you really get hangry, so you're not only hungry, but you're getting angry with it. At a certain time every day, plan to eat a satisfying lunch and have a healthy snack ready. Eat high protein and complex carbs, yes. Practice mindful meal hygiene. Instead of eating on the run, make mealtime an event. Sit down, stop working while you eat, take some deep breaths, and just really calm yourself so that you give your body a chance to digest. Take your time eating. Chew each bite 30 times until it's virtually a liquid. That's not very nice, is it? When you swallow. Just making digestion easier. Avoid strenuous activity for at least 60 minutes after eating. It takes time for your stomach to digest. Now, this article says avoid intermittent fasting. Now, I know quite a few women are doing intermittent fasting at the moment. It's really about your body and what you find helps. But if you're getting really hungry and you're getting angry with it, it might not be the way to go for you. Use nutraceuticals to stabilize blood sugars and balance hormones, and they're the vitamins, minerals, and other parts of food that provide health and medical benefits. Cinnamon is one food that's particularly helpful for stabilizing blood sugar levels, and chromium is another. So taking a chromium supplement can help. Yeah, lots more advice in that. So if you're interested in that, go to the mindbodygreen.com website. From The Guardian, and honestly, this has dominated the press here in the UK this week. Any number of articles I could quote from. Women struggling to sleep and work competently amid England's HRT shortages. And I've mentioned this before. Women are being left unable to sleep or work competently because of the shortages of hormone replacement therapy products used to treat symptoms. Former Cabinet Minister Caroline Noakes has said, the number of prescriptions for HRT in England has doubled in the last 5 years to more than 500,000 prescriptions a month. But the rise in prescriptions has come amid several years of HRT shortages, with pharmacists often unable to fulfill prescriptions. Shortages have been blamed on manufacturing and supply issues and have been exacerbated by the growing numbers of women seeking the products. It's all our fault, women. We want treatment. And the very following day, in The Guardian again, Sajid Javid, who's the Minister for Health, is to appoint an HRT czar to address acute shortages. So that's that sorted there. They appoint these czars here in the UK when there's some kind of crisis going on. The health secretary announces plans to tackle lack of products that has led to menopausal women turning to the black market. And what he means there is that women are trying to buy things online or borrow products from friends who've got them. You have to be really careful. You know, these reproductive hormones are very powerful. Javid said, "I know just how much women rely on HRT and some have been struggling to get certain medicines. I'm determined to do all I can to make sure that supplies are meeting hugely rising demand and there is equitable access." So we're getting a czar. That's going to sort that out. And my next one is particularly interesting concerning who my guests are this week. This comes from the endocrinologyadvisor.com. Shift work may affect the timing of natural menopause. Shift work, especially rotating shift work, was found to significantly affect the timing of natural menopause, according to the results of a study published in Menopause, which is the magazine of the North American Menopause Society, NAMS, if you look for it online. Researchers prospectively investigated the association between shift work exposure and variations in age at natural menopause in adult workers by analysing data from a Canadian longitudinal study on ageing. A total of 3,688 premenopausal women who participated in 3 years of follow-up were included, and self-reported information regarding their menopause and work status was evaluated. The mean age of participants at their baseline interview was 48.9 years. How accurate can you get? 48.9 years. And a majority of the participants were white. Now, that's really important because women of colour tend to go into menopause earlier, at least 2 years earlier in the States. And this is partly due to stresses caused by racism. Compared with women who worked during the day, those who were ever exposed to any type of shift work were more likely to have a later age at natural menopause. Regarding currently working women, night shift workers were at increased risk for earlier menopause, and rotating shift workers were more likely to have a later age at menopause compared with daytime workers. Women who worked the night shift as their longest job were at increased risk for early menopause, and those who reported working rotating shifts as their longest job had a later age of menopause compared with daytime workers. The overall risk for early menopause was found to be significantly increased in women who were current smokers and who participated in regular physical activity. That's interesting. Women who were overweight, obese, and with high parity were found to be at significant increased risk for later menopause. So some interesting statistics there. Let me turn to my guests now. Hi, Hannah and Benji. How are you doing today?
Hi, Pat.
Hi, everybody.
So, yeah, this thing about shift work is really interesting. I wasn't sure which way this was going to go, whether it was going to cause it to be earlier or later. Given the average age is around 51, 52 in the States, it looks like there is an effect from shift work. And of course, you know all about shift work. Benji, I think you know less about shift work, but Hannah, do you still do shift work, or are you on a more office pattern now? I think Hannah is...
Well, not so much now, but it's not that long since... I'm sort of more in the daytime, but I do the occasional shift still. So yeah, I can imagine that it would impact on it, and doing shifts is hard enough. So I'm not at all surprised.
Yeah. And Is it your back office staff as well as your firefighters who work shift work? Because do they have to kind of cover phones, or is it mainly the firefighters who do shifts?
Well, we've got the fire control who receive the phone calls, so they do work shifts. But in terms of the majority of our sort of back office are normal 9 to 5 kind of hours.
Yeah. So we know a lot about why sleep is important by the studies that are done on people who do shift work, so don't get the regular pattern of sleeping at night and being awake during the day. And some of those problems that occur with that can be more issues with controlling weight, some health issues as well. Is there anything that you do as part of the fire service to help to support people who are doing shift work, or do you wait and see and deal with whatever comes up?
Well, we do have time out to be able to go into the gym. So, I mean, that's an option. And then once you have you do your 2 days or your 2 nights, depending on what shift you're working, but you do then get 4 days clear of work as well. So it gives you that bit of time to recoup. But of course, then you're in that circle all the time where you're shifting and you're trying to fit back into sort of normal daytime hours. So yeah, but we do have gyms across the service for all of our staff to use.
Yeah, and I know when I came up and spoke to your colleagues, we were talking about menopause not just as something that affects women, but affects their partners as well. And if you're trying to get some sleep when you're working shifts and you've got a partner who's uncomfortable, who's waking up during the night, who's throwing the duvet on and off, I imagine that could be pretty difficult, and then you've got to come into work and do everything that you do. So it is really important that we face this not just as women, but that we recognize how it affects partners as well.
Yeah,
And
definitely.
yeah, and the mood shifts that can occur at this stage of life as well, affecting our partners and relationships generally. So yeah, it is an everybody issue, not just a women issue. And I'll be excited to have a menopause czar now. The current attitudes with what's happening in Russia and Ukraine, I wasn't sure we'd had czars anymore. I thought we might have something different. So how are things up in Cheshire? Has it been a nice spring up there? Have you had lots of snow, or has it been generally good?
Do you know what? It's been lovely, hasn't it? It's been really dry, really quiet, mild, I'd say. All like you say, the blossom's out, so it's really pretty at the moment. It's been lovely, really nice. But, and
Good.
to actually had some fairly warm.
Excellent. And before we came on air, you were saying, does anything really worry me? And I was just
Weather
thinking,
it at some point.
Yeah, we've not had rain for 10 days in Cheshire.
That's unusual. Over in the West, so for those of you in America, Cheshire's over in the Northwest, and it rains quite a bit. So, yeah, it can be quite challenging. And yeah, before we came on air, we were talking about things that can worry you. And, being on this radio show, I absolutely love doing it. So even though things can go wrong, it doesn't particularly bother me. But then I think about you as a firefighter. That would worry me, not knowing every day what I was going to come into. So how do you deal with that? How do you stay calm with everything that you do?
Well, I suppose that's a very good question. I think it all comes down to the level of training that we have and the support that we have in our colleagues, because you're not ever on your own to face issues on your own and or challenges or incidents. You're always part of the team. So I think that probably helps you get you through it. But say the level of training and then obviously the exposure that you get to incidents, it just becomes kind of the norm, I suppose. Not saying that any incident's ever the same, but you just get used to it. And I love it. There's nothing, it's just exciting. So it's not anything about it I don't really enjoy.
And what have you found with it, Benji? You must see a big difference from things you've done before being in that kind of environment.
Absolutely. I think in terms of our overall approach to men supporting staff's development around menopause, there's lots of awareness training. So all staff receive a sort of basic menopause awareness training. But managers, you know, get that extra level and that advanced level of training. And so that's creates that that supportive, inclusive environment that Hannah was alluding to. Yeah. The fact that, you know, there is that support there. When there is a major incident, that, you know, that individual kind of tailoring for staff, so staff that are experiencing symptoms, yeah. You know, that their considerations and needs are met.
Yeah, fantastic. So we're about to go off to the break. When we come back after the break, we'll find out why Hannah decided to be a firefighter and why Benji got involved in equality and diversity and what they've been doing, the amazing work they've been doing up at Cheshire Fire to help support colleagues at menopause. We'll see you after the break.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you on edge? Hey, we live in challenging, edgy times, so let's lean in. I'm Sandra Bargeman, the host of The Edge of Every Day, which airs each Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live with me and my friends and colleagues as we share stories and perspectives about pushing boundaries and exploring our rough edges. That's The Edge of Every Day on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back to the Hot Women Rock radio show, empowering women leaders at menopause. And it is very much a Hot Women Day today because my guests are Hannah Caulfield from Cheshire Fire Service, who is a firefighter, and Benji Evans. So Hannah is a station manager in Cheshire Fire and Rescue Service with 19 years in the job, working her way up the career ladder. She currently manages five of the on-call stations in Cheshire, and she's the chair of the Women's Network Limitless and passionate about promoting women in the fire service and providing support at the same time addressing any issues and barriers to help make Cheshire an inclusive service. And Benji has been promoting equality, diversity and inclusion for 17 years, working across various roles within sport, education, voluntary and public sectors. He's currently Equality, Diversity, Inclusion Advisor at Cheshire Fire and Rescue, a role he has held since 2019, where I first met him, I think, on his very first day at an event. Through Benji's role, he's an active member of the National Fire Chief Council EDI Working Group, and he currently attends the Asian Fire Service Association Extended Executive Committee. Welcome to both of you to the show. And Hannah,
thank you.
So did you always want to be a firefighter? Was little Hannah, did she have a fire engine or was it something that came on later?
No, No, absolutely not. To be honest, I wanted to be a doctor or a vet or a paramedic, something, you know, to do with biology, to do with helping people. But it came to a point when I realised that actually chemistry and physics, yeah, I'm probably going to struggle with them. So I decided not to pursue this avenue. And I ended up doing linguistics for Japanese at Reading University. And I hoped that I was going to become some sort of Japanese translator, as you do. But I didn't feel like I really fit. I didn't enjoy university at all. So after my first year, I took a year out. And lo and behold, I never went back. So at that point, I started working, you know, I felt like I'd really let my family down. But I started working in a factory testing food products as a lab technician, which a job that I really enjoyed. And then one day I was in the bar and I saw the local firefighters of my hometown, which is a quite small little town in deepest, darkest Somerset. And I asked them if they had any vacancies, because I thought it'd be really cool to be the first female firefighter of that town. But unfortunately, they didn't at that time. But given it a couple of weeks, they came back to me and said, oh, someone's just handed their notice in. Are you still interested? I was like, absolutely. So I jumped at the chance. I got in. And I did the job. So in order to do that, as an on-call a restaurant, all sorts of different things, cleaning for people. And I just thought, I need to make a career of something. I really enjoy the fire service. This is where I fit. I enjoyed everything about it, from the incidents, the camaraderie, the team working, just everything about it. So I thought, this is for me. So I spent 2 years applying to whole-time fire services across the length and breadth of the country. So 2 years, 10 applications, and I finally got into Cheshire Fire Service. So this is where I am now.
Fantastic. So, and your career has kind of gradually developed as well. So tell me more about that. How do you develop as a firefighter?
So I was first posted at Winsford in Cheshire. So I started there as a firefighter and best watch go in, and just it's just about, you know, the service provide lots of different development opportunities, so it's about taking them as and when, you know, you feel it's right for you, progressing through different examinations that we do, and then applying for those positions when they come up. So I've gone from firefighter, and then we moved up to a crew manager, then to a watch manager, and now, as you say, I'm a station manager. So the roles are very different, but they're all equally as good.
Do you still attend incidents, or are you mainly dispatching people to attend incidents?
No, I still get to attend, and I'm glad about that, because that's the bit that I really enjoy doing. But instead of going on a fire appliance now, I go on in a car with a blue light instead.
Oh, do you get to switch the blue lights on?
Yeah, it's not so much fun in a car, because people don't really see you. But in a fire engine, they definitely move out of the way for you.
Everybody wants to ride in a fire engine. Benji, how did you get involved in equality and diversity? What drew you in that direction?
Yeah, sure. I'll be honest that I didn't set out to go and work in equality and diversity. I had various jobs growing up. I've come from an agricultural background, so I studied agriculture at college. But I got to farming wasn't really a healthy industry at the time, so I thought I'd fancy trying doing something different. And my default really was to play sport. So I started coaching sport as well as so 7 days a week I was involved with sports in some capacity, but and benefit really from a health and social benefits, etc. And during university, I got involved with some disability sport groups. I really started to appreciate the inequalities in terms of women not accessing certain sports, the inequalities in terms of people from different racial groups, people that are religious being excluded from competitions at certain times of the year because their faith sort of took preference over, you know, over taking part in sport. So I really sort of got an interest in the equalities aspect. So when I left university, I went to work for a race equality charity down in Warwickshire, where I held various roles over a six-year period. So it went from sport to working a lot in health. There's that natural overlap with health. So the motivating factors with a lot of people to take part in sport is to be healthy, as opposed to maybe playing for a team as such. So I've lots of work around health. And then the charity I worked for did a lot of work with the police and sort of crime prevention, hate crime, etc. So that was really interesting. So I got involved on an occasional basis working in different aspects of equality, diversity, you know, going in and working, supporting colleagues to audit policies in public sector organisations. And it took me completely out of my comfort zone. But slowly but surely, I really developed some much broader skills. To the point where I found a job in Shropshire working in a college. So I was sort of moving, got some experience, moved a little bit closer to home with a promotion, which is great. I worked in a college for 5 years where I was very quickly asked to do some teaching. So it was all inclusion based. And that was fantastic for my personal development. It gave me the confidence to stand in front of a group, deliver training, but developing my own training resources as well. So at that time, because I'd done so much volunteering from university and through to that point of time, which was about 8 years down the line, I got involved with Great Britain Special Olympics. I was the national learning disability football coach. I'm very fortunate to have gone to the World Cup in LA. In the 2015 World Games, which was great. So alongside this role in the college, I was able to sort of really share some best practice, which is really good because I had some fantastic people supporting me in that national role. And then I really fancied working for a public sector organisation. I developed those broader skills basically focusing solely on one organisation, whereas previously working for a charity, I'd worked with different organisations. In the college, I was working with different students, which is great, in the community. So to go into one place at Cheshire Fire was fantastic. So I was very successful in an interview, and the rest is history, really.
And that first time I met you, that was your first week, wasn't it? And you were at the Women's Equality Day. It was a bit of a baptism on fire.
But it was fantastic, and you know, I do recall that international women's event, and obviously you were a speaker that day. But watching the chief walk out to open the event with a t-shirt saying "Talk to me about menopause," it was fantastic, and really got the conversation started, didn't it, back then about menopause, and really has sprung us into where we are now.
And it's so important, I think, to say that when you get that direction from the top of an organisation, when somebody is so bought into it, it makes it easier all the way down, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Because then, and particularly in an organisation like yours, where everybody's in uniform, seeing the guy with the biggest uniform who says this is really important, it really sends the right signal through the organisation.
Absolutely.
And I did love his t-shirt. I've actually got a picture on my desktop of standing next to him with that t-shirt. Amazingly, we're off to the break again. We haven't even started talking about what you've been doing. So join us after the break when we'll be talking about how Cheshire Fire have introduced a menopause policy and adjustments into the workplace. See you after the break.
Howdy, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the Hot Women Rock Radio Show, Empowering Women Leaders at Menopause, where my guests today are Hannah Caulfield and Benji Evans from Cheshire Fire and Rescue Service. So what started this journey towards introducing a menopause policy in the fire service? Where did you get going and why, Hannah?
So I think the main drivers really were, it was driven primarily by our women's network, which is called Limitless. And I sit on there as a chair, as you said earlier. And it was kind of a little bit of maybe selfishness in terms of looking at my future in the fire service. You know, I've got to work till I'm 60. So how is it going to affect me? And what's the support level going to be like? And it really concerned me. The more I read about the menopause and the, you know, I'm not suggesting that I'm going to have a bad menopause, but if I did, you know, how would it be and how would I be perceived and how would I be supported? And those are the sorts of things that I really wanted to look at, just to make sure that it was going to be okay. And I mean, is that although it sounds selfish, it's actually not. That's exactly what our network is for. It's about identifying and anticipating barriers and then addressing them, which is exactly what we've done. And it's going to benefit everybody in our fire and rescue service, because it's not just for those who are going to experience perimenopause and menopause. It's actually going to support those, you know, colleagues of mine, Benji, you know, we all have somebody who's going to have a menopausal experience. So it's going to benefit everyone.
I remember having that conversation at one of those meetings with Mark Cashin, the chief fire officer, where he was saying about having a meeting with a member of parliament and some other chief fire officers, where they were talking about the challenges of people staying longer in the service. Because I don't know if this is just a perception, you can tell me whether I'm right or not, but that fire officers or firefighters used to retire in their early 50s, they seem to go much earlier. And so they were talking about, well, what are the challenges of people staying on longer? And they were talking about fitness and health and everything. And he dropped into the conversation. And of course, there's menopause. And he said there was a silence, like he dropped a bomb in the room, you know, because nobody had really thought about that. So it is this business of, if you want to be equal, diverse, inclusive, and you've got women of all ages in your service, how is it that you're going to help them, and how are you going to support the people who support them as well? So it started with your Limitless group, and were other women raising this issue, or did it start off fairly reserved and not really talking about it?
I'd say it was fairly reserved, because people, as you say, weren't talking about it. But and it was quite difficult actually to get people to get involved with the working group, and I think it was just because people weren't, you know, used to getting out there and talking and not necessarily wanting to disclose that much about it. Because it almost, you know, I suppose there was a perception that you'd put your hand up and saying, yeah, actually, I'm going through it or whatever. So it was difficult. But for the, you know, and there are some people in the service who are, you know, in their early 20s who, you know, not even thought or considered it. And I get that. But for those people that could see the value that it's going to add, for those people who are either in the situation or who've gone through it, I think they were just kind of relieved that it was finally on the table, that is going to be addressed, and we're going to look at different ways to support people in, and just really get some acknowledgement around the fact that it could have some potential issues.
Yeah, and Benji, I'm sure you've seen this with other EDI issues of people initially pushing back of, well, let's not talk about it because that raises our profile. Perhaps we don't want people thinking about it too much. How do you kind of bring these things out into the open and get people talking about them?
Yeah, I think, well, there's an open, quite open, transparent culture within Cheshire Fire, and a very much a growth mindset in the sense of looking to how we can always improve. And I think with majority of our, particularly operational staff, the majority of our firefighters are male. And a lot of those males may not directly have experienced those symptoms themselves in terms of managing or working with colleagues on station, because female representation in the build-up to developing our policy was still quite low. I mean, our female representation is a lot higher than it was sort of 3-4 years ago. But back then, you know, the conversations around staff were very willing to explore opportunities. So the fact that the Women's Network raised it in the first instance, at least started that conversation. So whereas it wouldn't organically happen in maybe in a predominantly a male dominated team, it's great that we've got these sounding boards, if you like, through the Women's Networks to discuss it. So like lots of progressive work that we've done, it's happened through the start of a naturally, you know, as a male member colleague, I do need to be a better person all round as well. So
yeah, absolutely. And Hannah, how did you go around about developing the policy? Because it's really important that the policy reflects what employees want rather than what employees want to give.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, there was a little bit of debate around whether it should be a policy or whether it should be guidance. And we felt that there was benefit in having it in a policy, because primarily that's the way that we kind of work. But it also it gives those guidelines and the responsibilities for each individual, whether it be the individual or the experience, or whether it's line managers. So everybody's really clear about their responsibilities. But in terms of actually getting it to come to fruition, we set up a working group, as I said before, and this sort of consisted of different women with different experiences, different ages, different roles within the service, who would all have different experiences, obviously, but, you know, because they're working different hours, and, you know, the effect it could have on somebody who works in an office would be different to somebody who's actually out on a fire truck. So it was really important for us to get that diversity into the group. And then we just had some meetings where we would discuss what it was that we wanted to come out of the policy. And we looked at all the different symptoms, and there is a plethora of them. So what could we actually physically do anything about? You know, and in most cases it is a case of going to sort of medical practitioner, but there were some practicalities that we could change and some reasonable adjustments that we could introduce. And there's no reason why not to, you know, none of them were particularly difficult. It was really just about identifying those symptoms, what we can do, getting HR to write the policy, and they're the policy holders. And then it was consultation with lots of different other people, like health and safety, occupational health, Benji, and then the trade unions as well. So, and then the final sign off with the SMT, the senior management team, that is. So it took a long time to get there, but we did, and I'm so glad we have.
And another thing as well that we added in, Pat, was that we consulted with the other staff networks to make sure that the policy considered intersectionality, and that we were looking at the policy from different perspectives and different quality lens, you know, from a quality perspective through different lens, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you were quite innovative in some of the adjustments that you made as well. So some of the things that you've practical things you've put in place, I think, have been quite innovative, like, you know, what you keep in the fire appliances. Could you just say a bit about that?
Yeah, so we do have a list of reasonable adjustments and different things that we've applied, but it isn't exhaustive, and obviously everybody's menopause is going to be different, or everybody's experience and needs are different. So we do manage it on a case-by-case basis, but what we have on the appliance now, which we've never had before, was and like a sanitary pack. So we have, you know, in case of that unwanted visit, unexpected visit, we actually do have some provisions for, you know, tampons and sanitary towels and wipes and things like that on the fire appliance now. So that's been, it's something so simple. But we also have that in the vehicles that are used by the other departments as well. So yeah, everybody should be catered for there. Other things we have, additional uniform, people can use showers, you know, obviously go to the toilet whenever they need to. We've got desk fans and hand fans available if people need it. And our occupational health actually introduced a discussion around osteoporosis and the risk for the health questionnaire that's conducted for people who are over 45 in the service. So, lots of work. But in addition to that, we've got a mental health advisor and a fitness advisor who can all give advice on nutrition, fitness, and just good mental health, really.
Yeah, I think the first time I came up was on a mental health day event that you were having, and really recognizing how menopause can affect mental health, that some women feel more anxious than they've ever felt, part of that being due to lack of sleep, or, you know, going on a bit of a mood roller coaster, or just the fatigue. And as I say, then the knock on to their partners or, you know, family members from them going on this roller coaster. So addressing that and bring it out into the open. So Benji, how have you got involved in these discussions? Are women open with you talking about this?
Absolutely. I think obviously with the Limitless meetings, you know, I do attend those meetings. They are formal meetings that take place on a quarterly basis. But there are sort of, you know, safe spaces for females that maybe don't know me to have conversations with Limitless members outside of those meetings. But generally, I'm sort of involved. I'm one of the gang, really, in many ways. But I think it's a case of where, you know, sort of gender doesn't really come into it in many ways, although that we have got menopause champions. The majority of those are females, so females that do feel more comfortable to go and speak to females. But I think it is some women may prefer to go and speak to a guy as well. So there's myself and my colleague Lawrence, who's the mental health advisor, that are very active in terms of being menopause champions. So I think people do come for advice as well. Sometimes, not with my sports background, some people know that, you know, ask some advice around nutrition or some fitness type stuff as well. People always come to me quite openly. I've not seen any experience, any barriers there. So
that's really good. And as I say, I think it comes from the top when women know that there isn't a stigma attached to it, that there's no taboo around talking about it, then it can be really good. And I've had men come on my online workshops and because they wanted to support their partners. They're like, I just need to know about this stuff so that I can help my partner, or in the workplace, you know, if somebody mentions it to me, I don't feel embarrassed and I can talk about it, or I know what the words mean that they're saying to me. So the education has to be for everybody. And if, you know, if you're not living with a female partner, you've got a mum or a sister or a friend or whatever. So join us after the break when we'll be talking about where Cheshire Fire are going in the future with their plans and what their vision is for menopause in the future. See you after the break.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Calling all pet lovers.
Pet Avengers, assemble!
On the Professionals and Animal Lovers show, we believe the bond between animal lovers is incredibly strong. It mirrors that bond between pets and their owners. Through this program, we come together to learn, educate, and advocate.
Join us live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. at talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the final quarter of the Hot Women Rock radio show, Empowering Women Leaders at Menopause, where my guests today are Hannah Caulfield and Benji Evans from Cheshire Fire Service. So you've put your plans in place, you've got your policy, you've done your reasonable adjustments. How are you seeing the future? What are your plans now? So yeah, what?
Sorry, we forgot to unmute.
Oh. I should have had my little sign.
Needed that little sign just to say unmute. Yes, so basically, having sort of launched the policy, we needed to make sure that we brought it to life. So the first sort of step, if you like, was to communicate to our staff that the policy's out there, so and educate sort of all the managers around the procedures within the policy. So we provide some basic training for staff and some more advanced training for our managers. But in addition to that, we offered some advanced training around menopause to a cross-section of menopause champions. So we've got representatives from various departments with different levels of experience, some that have gone through menopause, some haven't yet, and some people that generally just got an interest. So it's a really good sort of group of people, if you like, that have worked together to share resources and really bounce off each other. But what they essentially offer is some basic advice and some guidance within the boundaries of that role, and essentially signpost people to further information, whether that's to myself so I could work with them, whether it's the line manager to make those individual adjustments. So we've talked briefly about adjustments, but they're kind of general adjustments. So there will be individual adjustments that we'll make for individuals. And sometimes, for those that are experiencing the 25% experience extreme symptoms, we will work with those to do everything that we can, whether that's in terms of altering their shift pattern slightly, looking at the environment, the temperature of the room. So it might be the winter, but somebody's still really hot. And whereas most people would want the window open, just that awareness is there that actually having a bit of airflow really does help. So the Menopause Champions has been really a real success. So effectively on one, we've got a page on our staff intranet with a list of all the different menopause champions, a little bit of a bio on there so people can sort of, if they don't know anybody that's there already, they've got a little bit of information, and there's a photograph there so people can carefully select who they'd want to go and speak to. And there's a library of resources on there as well, which are accessible. So someone you could download as a PDF document, as a Word document, or there's some podcasts and some audio versions, acknowledging that different people like to receive information in different ways. So that intranet page is a fantastic reference point for people to go and get some information.
You've answered what was going to be my next question, because it was really about how do you get the information that the women need to them. And so your intranet's really important. And are you still talking about it in the Limitless group as well? Is that another way that they get information?
To benefit it stays there as one of our standing items anyway. So it's always on the agenda. But we also, we forgot to mention that we do step up and step into training, which is part of our talent management framework. So anybody, any aspiring managers actually get input from Benji and myself on menopause and maternity and other female related issues. So we do deliver training right at the beginning. Benji does it on the induction as well, so everyone gets a bit of training. And going forward, I think that the idea is for us to then get some training rolled out across the service to absolutely everybody, because although we don't want COVID to sound like an excuse, it has put a complete spanner in the works. And it's obviously during the pandemic we've been sort of firefighting day-to-day issues, and it's sort of held us up a bit, but hopefully we're learning to live with the pandemic, and we're able to crack on with what we had planned.
Absolutely.
So for anybody, any organisation that's listening, and we know from a survey only the other week that only about 28% of organisations have put policies in place, and we know that a policy isn't for every employer. You know, it depends on the makeup of your organisation and the policies you've already got in place. But if people listening are thinking about getting started, what's the first thing that they need to do? What's your top tip?
I think mine would be to get the senior managers to buy into it, because as you said earlier, like our chief is a middle-aged man who is more than happy to really open to talking about it, and it's got to be got out there. Everyone's got to feel comfortable to talk about it, and it's, I think for me, that's the only way you can normalize it's something that is actually completely normal. So I think to get the senior leaders to buy into it, to get the staff involved in developing policy as well.
I think the business case for having a diverse workforce, there's lots of research out there around that. So, 50% of our population is female. So any organisations that aren't tapping into that diverse talent are missing out, basically. So any organisation that does aspire to attract more females into their workforce, particularly male-dominated environments, which, finance, IT, construction, there's lots of industries out there. Some emergency services still are dominated by males within their workforce. So any organisations that are serious about attracting the best talent need to look after their existing workforce. And automatically your attraction strategy will speak volumes, because your staff will be your biggest asset, and they will promote how good it is to come and go to work for that employer if they're having a really positive and supportive time at work. And so that's the biggest advice I'd say: managers educating themselves around menopause, and if they're serious about promoting gender equality, menopause, it's really important to get that right.
Yeah, and are you seeing more women coming into the fire service now generally? Is it more of a career that women are being attracted to?
Yeah, well, across the UK Fire Service, there is an underrepresentation of females, in particularly in operational roles. Mm. Here in Cheshire, we have seen a 3% increase in the last 18 months in operational roles, which is fantastic. And we've seen, I'm not sure, in the last quarter, we've had two new cohorts of staff. So I'd be quite interested to have a look at the latest monitoring information, which obviously will be higher than the 3% that I just alluded to. So it's really exciting. We have lots of applications for females. During whole-time recruitment, we can only take 12 or 24 any one time. So to see a lot more females applying and working with those individuals that weren't successful in this last recruitment campaign is really exciting. So it's really good. And lots of fire services across the UK are recruiting more women into their services and in non-operational roles. I mean, I'm conscious that there's lots of roles within the fire service and it just isn't firefighters. It's fantastic to see, that women do make up majority of the non-ops roles across the service. So in the UK fire service.
I know, Hannah, there's only a few female chief fire officers. Could we see Chief Fire Officer Hannah one day?
Well, we never say never, but...
I'm going to be honest, not just because Hannah's next to me, but I could see Hannah being a chief fire officer, most definitely.
That's what I'm picturing, Hannah, and you can take all this experience with you, and it would be fabulous to do that. Thank you both.
Well, thank you, Pat. Thank you.
The time has gone really quickly, as always. Thank you for all that you're doing, because the firefighters and everything you've been doing in the past couple of years has been amazing in helping us through COVID. So from a grateful nation, thank you very much. And thank you for joining me today to share your experience. Stay listening to talkradio.nyc, where the next program is Dismantle Racism. This could be one for you to listen to, Benji. Dismantle Racism with Reverend Dr. TLC, where today she's talking about maximizing your energy for good. And her guest is the amazing Deborah Poneman. I love Deborah, best-selling author of Chicken Soup for the American Idol Soul and founder of Yes to Success Seminars. So we love Deborah. Perhaps I'll get her on my show one day. If you've missed any of the previous shows, go to talkradio.nyc/hotwomenrock, where you will find all the recordings. Next week, my guest is Elizabeth Pearson, and we'll be talking about women investing so they have some pension when they're ready to retire, which is really important. And if your organisation is going into looking at menopause and you're either at an early stage or you've started working in this area of creating a policy, talk to me, patduckworth.com. You can find my contact form and talk to me about what it is you're trying to do and whether I can support you. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy your week. Next week, as I say, I'll be talking to Elizabeth Pearson. Thank you again to my guests. Thank you to my producer, Dylan, and have a brilliant week. See you next week. Take care now.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a
business
owner?
Anyway.
Do you work with business owners?
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you on edge? Hey, we live in challenging, edgy times, so let's lean in. I'm Sandra Bargeman, the host of The Edge of Every Day, which airs each Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live with me and my friends and colleagues as we share stories and perspectives about pushing boundaries and exploring our rough edges. That's The Edge of Every Day on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Informed about menopause and how it impacts on your life? Hi, I'm Pat Duckworth, women's health strategist and host of the Hot Women Rock radio show, empowering women leaders at menopause. Join me every Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. UK time on talkradio.nyc for interviews with inspirational women who will share their top tips to rock your world.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Podcast Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.